A family reunion. I always say if you miss church, you're going to miss something. So just show up at church. 1 Kings chapter 3. Nick, the young people are on their out west trip. I couldn't go this year because of staffing issues and the other youth pastors training the new youth pastor and all those kind of things. You think about it. Pray for them. Pray for them. Nick was used to, he was a regular on those trips. 1 Kings chapter 3 in your Bible with me. This morning, I gave a message on honor thy father. And I think this is great, but I had to chuckle a little bit because all afternoon and then even tonight, people come up to me and said, Pastor, we loved that sermon, and we forwarded it, email, you know, the electronic version, and we sent it to all of our kids. And so apparently people feel like if they weren't honored, they should be, and so their kids got that, and I hope they listen to it. It really, kind of, I think some of you who sent that on to your kids, you might have been using it as a swift kick in the seat of the pants from the preacher. I think that's what that is. But if they need it, they need it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Tonight, though, I want us to consider the relationship of a father and son and a son who sought the blessings that were experienced by his father. A son who, by the way, would have had opportunity to go a completely different direction, but who recognized in wisdom that he had on a minimalist level to begin with and then later maximized, as you'll see in the story, he recognized in wisdom that if he followed in his daddy's footsteps, the blessing of God would be his. And I think you'll understand when we read the story, 1 Kings, beginning at chapter 3, verse number 5. 1 Kings 3, verse number 5. The Bible says, in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I shall give thee. Now remember, Solomon, the son of King David. David has passed away. Solomon is assuming the throne. And Solomon said to the Lord, thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy. Notice, the son took note of the mercy that God had shown to his father. He didn't take it for granted. He looked back at the life of his father David, and he recognized that there were points in time when God could have judged David very severely and chose not to do so. That there were points in time when God carried David through trials that were beyond David's ability. Solomon recognizes that. And so in the Lord appearing to Solomon in this dream, Solomon said, thou hast shown unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And I want you to notice that. He says, I notice not only were you merciful, God, but you did it because my daddy was not perfect, but he did try. He walked close to you. He knew you. He had a real relationship with you. There was a level of uprightness about him. He walked in truth. I noticed that you blessed my dad and you were merciful to my dad because he walked close to you and his heart was with you. Look what it says. And thou hast kept for him all this great kindness that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. God, I also noticed that you performed your promise. You made a promise to my daddy that there would never be a time when there would not be a descendant to sit upon David's throne. Oh, there would be times when David's throne would be removed from the land because of disobedience to the Palestinian covenant, but yet there would never lack a descendant to sit on David's throne. There would never be one that was missing, and ultimately his throne would be an everlasting throne. He says, God, I've noticed that you kept your promise because here I am the son of David in fulfillment of your promise. Look at verse number 7. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant, speaking of himself now, king, instead of David my father, and I am but a little child, and know not how to go out or to come in. I want you to pause for a moment. I love the attitude. The attitude wasn't, well, you know, my daddy, he was old school, and he had some old-fashioned ways about him, and times have changed, and I can hardly wait to get a hold of the reins of this kingdom because I'm going to bring this kingdom into the next century. I'm going to improve it. That was not Solomon's attitude. Solomon, in his, and I said it in the beginning of my introduction, in his minimalist wisdom, Solomon was humble and understood the gravity of the responsibility placed upon his shoulders. And he understood this, and listen carefully, he did not have all of his daddy's wisdom. He did not have all of his daddy's talent. he certainly did not have all of his daddy's legend. Of all the names mentioned in the Old Testament, the name David appears most frequently. He didn't have all of that legend and that lore that had built up around his father. He didn't have all of the popularity. He had not slain all of the Philistines, nor had he slain the giant. He did not kill the lion and the bear. Solomon understood that he was filling very large shoes. Do you know, humility is something that God honors. When someone has a humble spirit, when we realize that we don't know everything when we are in our 20s, but that those who have lived much longer know much more. What young people are in the room tonight, I would tell you this, part of the key to success is not to just turn a blind eye to the wisdom of your parents. It's not to turn a deaf ear to the things that they say, "Oh, Pastor Monty," but their thinking is so antiquated. Their antiquated thinking is exactly what this world needs. By the way, we're experiencing in this nation the death of common sense. The death of common sense. May I talk about that for a moment? I digress. I have enough common sense to know which bathroom to use. The death of common sense. I have enough common sense to understand. I have common sense. I understand that when a world religion is guilty of mayhem on every continent, that there is something inherently evil about the entire religion and not just the radical end. Do you know why I know that? I have common sense. I have common sense enough to realize that if America doesn't name and recognize her enemies, we are in trouble, because you cannot fight an enemy that you cannot see. I have common sense. I have common sense enough to believe that an unborn baby inside the womb of a mother is still a baby, and that given time, that baby will emerge as a baby just as it was a baby in the womb. I have common sense. I have common sense enough to understand that God intended for a man and a woman to marry, male and female to marry. By the way, that he only created male and female. And do you know what? I have common sense. I have common sense enough to tell you there's only one of two options, male or female, and that's it. And the one you're born with is what you get. This is common sense. And everything I've said flies in the face of the currently popular millennial mushhead mumbo jumbo that is being promoted from the highest echelons of the entertainment world and the political world. To have a president whose ultimate legacy will be confusion over bathrooms is a national embarrassment. And it bespeaks the death of common sense. Well, what I'm saying tonight is this. The former generation understood these things because they were common sense. For a younger generation to largely question these issues, to wonder about them, it bespeaks to me the death of common sense. But it also says that if there's ever been a day and time when young people should be in tune to older people, it is today. And now you say, "Well, Pastor Monty, you just sound like that old codger that's up there in the pulpit, decrying the younger generation." I'm not. But you know what I did as a young man? As a young man, I determined, when God called me to the ministry, I determined sometime in the course of my Bible college education that my heroes in ministry would not be my peer group, nor would they be anyone, regardless of how successful he may be, that was younger, but that my heroes in ministry would be older men. That the example that I would follow would not be the youth, but would be the old man, the one who had stayed the course. My pastor, Richard V. Clearwaters, is my ultimate ministry hero. For 42 years, the pastor of the Fourth Baptist Church of Minneapolis had built that place into an evangelistic powerhouse for God, by the way, and an educational powerhouse for God. He built that place into something wonderful, and I look to his example, not to something younger. You say, why? Because he's gone down the road. He's taken a few hits. He understands some things different from what I understand them, and he has a different perspective. And though he's been dead and gone since 1996, I look back on his example and I say, God, give me that wisdom. I need it. I don't have it. Wise we would be, those of us who are younger, to look at those who are older, not to look askance at them as if they are just too simplistic. Oh, not sophisticated enough. My parents aren't very smart. They can't figure out an iPhone. And you couldn't change a tire on your car if your life depended on it. Let's just be frank. My point is this. Solomon had great wisdom. He'll get more in the passage in just a moment. But Solomon had great wisdom in that he acknowledged his need. He said this. He said, I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in. Verse number 8. Thy servant, Solomon said, recognizing the great responsibility placed upon his shoulders, and thy servant is in the midst of thy people, they're God's people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Verse number 9. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people? God, give me understanding. Give me wisdom. Give me a spirit of knowledge. God, I saw this represented in David. I saw it in my daddy. Now, God, the nation has grown. And by the way, under Solomon, the nation would exceed its greatest extent ever geographically and reach the absolute height, the pinnacle of its success under Solomon. And Solomon said, God, I need wisdom. I don't know what to do. I need your guidance. I saw it in my daddy, and now I need this wisdom as well. Look at verse number 10. All of this taking place, by the way, in a dream. And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the gift of life of thine enemies or the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any rise like unto thee. I have also given unto thee that which thou hast not asked. Now notice this. With the wisdom, God said, here's the bonus, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. Verse 14, and if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, note these words, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Look this way. There is great wisdom in seeking the blessing of God as seen on a former generation. I want to just briefly tonight talk about some of the blessings that Solomon saw and that he sought. In other words, Solomon had the capacity as a younger man to look back at that generation and listen carefully to me, rather than critique them, to look back on that generation and say, they had something that I need. The spirit of the age, and you kind of got probably from the message this morning the idea that this is in my craw today. The spirit of the age is one of critiquing the former generation. Whenever, for example, the anniversary of the dropping of nuclear bombs on Japan, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, whenever that comes about, there's a lot of talk about that. And a lot of people like to criticize that decision a generation or two later. And there's critiquing. Well, should we or shouldn't we? Well, it was probably not nice. Well, probably some civilians got fried in the whole thing. It was probably not very nice. It astounds me. It astounds me that a generation that has never faced the threat of losing the entire country, losing it all, and being enslaved by a foreign power would even dare to raise the slightest critique of what brave and character-filled men and hard decisions, you have Pastor Monty, that they just made a decision. No, a hard decision. Mr. Truman made a hard decision. And I would never step back, having never felt the threat that my nation was going to be taken away from me, that I would be enslaved by a foreign power. I would never step back and critique the decisions of that generation that has preserved for me freedom. I would never dare walk on that ground. It's about time we understood that a former generation had something. There is a reason that Tom Brokaw referred to that generation as the greatest generation. There is a reason. There is a reason they had something that we're lacking. They had something that we need. Maybe it was love of country. Maybe it was a sense of duty and character. As World War II progressed, my dad was only 17 years old, but my dad begged and begged my grandfather to sign a piece of paper to allow my dad to enter the conflict 1 year early before he was of age. I have a copy of that paper at home where my grandfather, Joseph Monty, signed his name and let dad go in. My dad's big fear was that it would all be over before he got a chance to be in it. Do we have that attitude today? Oh, Pastor Monty, that was just such a warmongering generation. Stop your criticism. When you think about life or death and the preservation of your nation, it's not warmongering. I would well remind you, we didn't start it, but we, as my mother would say, we jolly well did finish it. And all of us is here today as a result. I'm saying that there's great wisdom in Solomon looking at his dad's generation and saying they really had something. And rather than saying we can improve upon it or we will just scuttle all of it, jettison it to the rock heap of history, Solomon has the wisdom to say, I need what my daddy had. What did David have? Look quickly with me at verse number 8. Solomon said, as he's speaking to the Lord in this dream, Thou hast shown unto thy servant David, my father, notice this, great mercy, great mercy. Solomon said, Lord, I need the same mercy. Now, of course, the mercy of salvation, and David was a man who believed in the promise of God that God would ultimately send a Messiah. David was a saved man, but also, I think, mercy in withholding judgment that was deserved. Solomon, think of this with me, knew his daddy as well as anyone in the world would have known him. He knew all of the things that daddy had done even before he had kids. He understood when David was out sowing his wild oats. He was well familiar with his father's failure. He was also well familiar with God's grace. I'll bring it up because it comes to mind. David was very far from a perfect man. He had episodes and moments in his life of great depression, great sorrow. He had episodes and periods of time when he walked distant from the Lord. Now, overall, his life was one close to God, but he had those ups and downs that all of us experience. And probably the low point of David's life was his committing adultery and then ultimately murder. And those two sins, the Old Testament does not give any sacrifice, any animal sacrifice, sufficient to cover those sins. In fact, the Old Testament prescription for those sins is the punishment of death, capital punishment. That did not happen to David. That's why, by the way, David said, offering, burnt offering and sacrifice you wouldn't have. You won't receive it for this. He did confess his sins. He did find forgiveness of his sins. And God mercifully stayed the ultimate judgment. Now listen carefully. We know there was chastisement, the death of that child that was a result of the illicit union. We know that there was chastisement, but ultimately God spared David's life. And I wonder if in this dream those thoughts weren't going through Solomon's mind when he said, Lord, he said, you showed great mercy to my father David. My daddy was a great man, but my daddy had some major flaws, some big failures. And God, yet through all that, you showed great mercy. I think it's wonderful when God preserves a person in his mercy when they don't deserve it. He said, Preacher, why would Solomon pray for that? Because Solomon was smart enough to know that though he is king, he also has feet of clay. Let me make a remark here. Every person in this room ought to recognize that. Well, Pastor Bonnie, I'm an independent fundamental Baptist. I have all the standards right, and I know everything about it. I'm cool. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. And I love Solomon's humility because he says, if I'm going to lead, I can't exalt myself to the place where I don't recognize a need for the mercy of God. He also recognized that at some point in his reign, and we could go into this in detail, he recognized at some point in his reign he would make mistakes and need God's mercy. This bespeaks of someone of wisdom. He recognized the mercy of God upon his daddy's life. He wanted the same thing. But look again in verse number 6. Thou hast shown unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy. Notice this. According as he walked before thee in truth and righteousness. Solomon also said this. Not only did my daddy experience mercy, but my daddy experienced truth. Preacher, what are you talking about? Think with me for a moment. David, Solomon's daddy, not only was king, but he also held another colloquial title. He was known as the sweet psalmist of Israel. Many, many, many of the psalms, including Psalm 23. By the way, Psalm 23, the most beautiful prose in the English language. Psalm 23 in the English language, King James Version, of course, is the apex of the accomplishment of all of the English language. There is nothing more beautiful than the words of Psalm 23. It was David, the sweet psalmist of Israel, who under the divine inspiration of the Spirit of God penned those truths. Let me ask you a question. When David passed on and Solomon became king, do you think that Solomon turned to those psalms to find some truth? He sure did. For Solomon, the psalms were like a biography of his father's life. In fact, Solomon may have had more familiarity with some of the direct circumstances of the writing, the penning of some of the Psalms, more familiarity than we do. And so when he would read through the Psalter, the hymn book of Israel, Solomon would look upon it and say, oh, I remember the circumstances under which my daddy wrote that, and I understand exactly what he meant. And he had the absolute truth of God. It's wonderful when one generation looks at another generation and says, they were blessed with the truth, I'm going to preserve it. Part of my responsibility as a pastor is to preserve truth as brightly as it was handed to me. My pastor, Dr. Clearwaters, handed me a torch of truth that burned very, very brightly. It was a torch of truth that was very precise regarding theological matters. And by the way, this church finds theology important, because what you believe matters. It was a torch of truth regarding Christian living and a torch of truth regarding the inspiration of Scripture. It was a torch that was handed to me very brightly burning, and I have a responsibility to hand it as brightly down to the next generation and not to diminish it and not to compromise it, not to cover it, and by the way, not to be ashamed of it just because it's not politically correct. I have a responsibility. And understand that. Solomon looked back, and he said, my daddy David had some truth, and he said, I need to get a hold of it. But what else? Look at verses 6 and 7 again. Verse number 6, he speaks of the truth that he held, and then he said this, thou hast kept for him this great kindness, for David, you've kept this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son, he's speaking of himself, to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant, Solomon speaking of himself, king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. Now notice that. He also had a legacy. He had a legacy. He recognized that he had inherited what his father had fought for. What I just said is huge. He recognized he inherited what his father fought for. There is a sense in which sometimes youth takes for granted the things that we have, not understanding the price that was paid to secure them and to protect them. I love the words of Solomon because Solomon recognized that he had a legacy, that the kingdom was coming to him as a result of his father, and that while Solomon would have some battles in regard to the kingdom, none of them would come close to the battles that David himself fought. He had a legacy. He understood, by the way, the legacy of the promises of God. He understood that David had been promised by the Lord an everlasting throne, that there would never lack a descendant to sit upon the throne of David. He understood that this was something that was eternal, that this is something that God was doing, and he was part of that. I think that's tremendous. I think it's good for young people sometimes to step back in their life and look at the legacy. And understand, some young people come from dysfunctional homes. I get that. But we talked about this morning, God has a purpose in that, a sovereign plan. Everyone has a legacy. Your legacy may not be gated community. Your legacy might be ghetto. I don't know. Everyone has a legacy. But when you step back, you see God's plan. I certainly see that in my own life. I remember years and years ago, after I had was in college, I was in college studying for the ministry, and my older brother John, who was not a Christian at the time, later he became a Christian, he got saved. But my older brother John, who was not a Christian at the time, he took me out. We were ice fishing. Anyone ever go ice fishing? Ice fishing in Minnesota, what a delightful thing. The fun part is driving your car onto a frozen lake. That's the fun part. That's where it all begins. And then hearing it crack, that's the fun part. It's exciting. Drilling that hole and having a little tent and having a little propane heater that you breathe propane fumes, that's exciting. Passing out because you breathe. But anyway, we were fishing together, and John was talking to me. Of course, I'd been witnessing to John some. And John said this. He said, Dad died a long time ago. But he said, I want to tell you something. He said, you didn't know Dad as well as I did, because John was 14 years older than I. He said, you didn't know Dad as good as I did, but he said, I can sure tell you something. He said, though your dad would never have understood, as John probably called it, your bent toward religion, okay? Though Dad would have never understood that, he said, Dad would be very proud of you. Just telling you something, that was huge to me. That was huge to me. To hear that from my older brother, who at the time wasn't a Christian, not at all a Christian, but he said, Dad would be really proud. There's a legacy. There's a legacy. Young people, rather than abandoning that, should value it, should embrace it. Whatever family you've come from, those are things of great value. Solomon had the sense to value his family legacy and went so far as the Davidic covenant. And so in verse number 9, Solomon says this to the Lord, give therefore. The reason the word therefore is there, because of everything that's gone before. Lord, because of all the remembrance that I'm making of my father David, because of everything you blessed David with, and because of the wisdom you gave David, and because of the legacy you've given me, because of all these things, give therefore, verse 9, thy servant, speaking of Solomon himself, an understanding heart. He says, God, give me wisdom. David possessed great natural wisdom, intuition. Here comes the second man now after David, the descendant, the new king. He says, I need that wisdom too. I guess I'll use this as an illustration of that. I remember when we support Pensacola Christian College, a lot of young people go there. I remember when there was the change in leadership from Dr. Horton, who founded the college, to Dr. Shoemaker, who is now the president of the college. I remember something Dr. Shoemaker said to me. He said this. He said, Brother Monty, he said, Dr. Horton built this entire college, and it's huge. Fortune 500, entrepreneurial, it's incredible. He said he built this entire college on intuition. And I said, Dr. Shoemaker, what do you mean by that? He said, somehow Dr. Horton just knew the right thing to do. He said he didn't have to study it out, he didn't have to think about it, he didn't have to look at numbers, he didn't have to analyze it. He said Dr. Horton just made right choices. He built it on intuition. Wouldn't it be good, by the way, to have that as your blessing? It would be good. But then he said this, he said, honestly, I'm not that way. By the way, this is humility. He said, I'm not that way. He said, I'm a numbers person, I have to analyze, I have to look at everything, I have to figure it all out. And then he said this, he said, Brother Monty, pray that I will have the wisdom of God. Let me tell you something. That's what's needed in every task. What did James say in the book of James? He said, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given to him. But you have to have the humility to ask. Because if you think you know it all, God will have a way of bloodying your nose with that attitude. You've got to have the humility to ask. And so Solomon said, Lord, give me wisdom. My daddy David, it was intuitive with him. There's just something about it. He made good choices. God, give me the same wisdom. And then you know what happened? God was happy with that, verse 10. The speech pleased the Lord. And so in verses 11 and 13, God said, I'll give you even greater blessings than David. I'll give you a long life. I'll give you wealth. And I'll give you health. If you'll follow the commandments. Here's my point tonight. There is great wisdom in looking at the former generation and saying, I want to be like them. I know every generation has their styles and their fads. I know it. I just know bell bottoms are coming back. I just know it. Every generation has that. I'm not talking about that. But every generation should look at the former generation and say, they really got a hold of something. And I could really be something if I knew and got a hold of now what they ended up knowing at the end of their days. Someone asked me this question one time. They said, Preacher, how come it is that the most important decisions we make, what our career's going to be, who we're going to marry, things like that, he said, why are those decisions made on the stupid side of life? Does everybody get that? When you're young, he called that the stupid side of life. He said, later on, you know things better. I said, I don't know, but I do know this. I can look at a former generation, and I can look at their good decisions, and I can look at some of their poor ones, and I can say, I have learned and am blessed by following the godly example of a former generation. Let me say this and I'm done. I don't have to start all over and figure everything out. Young people, did you hear what I said? You don't have to figure it all out. Oh, I can't figure out life. A whole lot of it's already been figured out. You just need to look back to your daddy. You need to look back to godly pastors, good examples. You just need to look back. They figured a whole lot of things out. And then just get a hold of what they had a hold of. Father, thank you for your word and for Solomon. Lord, the example of a son heeding the wisdom of a father. Thank you for that. Help us all to look back at the glories of a former generation and understand they knew some things. Oh, Lord, they weren't technologically sophisticated, but they didn't have half the problems we have, and certainly not the mental problems. Lord, I just pray you'll help us to see it and help us to realize that we're sometimes too smart for our own good. We need to simply and humbly ask for your help and your divine wisdom through the complicated course of life that we live in our time. Bless these thoughts, we pray in Jesus' name. Let's all